This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
And his name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's the Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS.
Yes, I.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett. Thanks for hanging out with The Takeout. However you find this show, great radio stations across our country, Sirius XM, POTUS Channel 124, of course, CBS News Streaming, and all of our beloved early adopters on every podcast platform. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for vibing with us. Al Franken is our guest this week. He's been on the show before. When he was a senator. Now he is on tour, and I want to give you the title of the tour in case you want to get tickets. The only former senator currently on tour. So Al Franken is...
Former U.S. senator currently on tour.
Former U.S. senator currently on tour. I guess there are probably some state senators. Yeah, so far as we know.
As far as we know, yeah.
And Al's coming to us from New York City. Al, it's good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Major. Great to be here.
So, I want to get to the tour in a second, but the title says only former senator, U.S. senator currently on tour. Yes.
Should
you be a former U.S. senator?
No. I should be a senator. But what happened was just something very odd at a certain moment. I've had 9 of my former colleagues apologize to me publicly for not... All I wanted was due process, and they came to recognize that. And I've had a few apologize to me, not publicly. I haven't forgiven them. I've forgiven the one I've done it publicly. But no, I believe I should still be there. I believe if I got in due process, I would.
You believe if there had been due process, and for our audience's benefit, that means an ethics committee review.
Yeah.
If there had been an ethics committee review, what do you think would have been disclosed?
Well, I would just point people to the only investigative article that was done. And this was done by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker. And I think that, for example, one of my former colleagues who apologized is Dick Durbin. He read the article and immediately, after reading the article, went down to the Capitol and found the first Washington Post reporter and went on record apologizing. And so I think, I don't want to go through each and every one of these, but I think if people go to the New Yorker article, they'll get some sense of what this was.
Right. And yet in the New Yorker article, and I think in your expression since then, you still believe there was something you had to apologize for. You just don't believe the appropriate sanction was to force you into a resignation from your position in the United States Senate.
Well, understand what I've said is that I've taken pictures with thousands of people, and it was never my intention to make anybody ever feel uncomfortable. When this hit me, I was 66 years old. No one had ever made an allegation of any of this sort. And so what I said is, if I did something to make someone feel uncomfortable, I apologize for that. And that, then that's sincere. But I meant that. And, you know, when you take pictures, I talk to a lot of my friends in show business. When people take pictures with you, they want to look as intimate as possible. You know, they really, and I was just talking to David Axelrod the other day, mm-hmm. and he said that, remember, he was saying he took a picture with a woman who later became ambassador to something with she was taking a picture with President Obama. And right at the time they took the picture, she kissed him on the lips. And Axelrod just said, "Reggie, get rid of that picture."
Right.
And
right.
And so.
And for the audience's benefit, Reggie is Reggie Love,
yeah.
body man to President Obama, who I got to know very well during the 2007-2008 campaign.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to talk. I want to switch subjects a little bit. But one last thing on this. Do you believe in our current political environment, due process is even possible?
I think it's more possible now. Remember, that was there's a reason for that timing. It was right after Harvey Weinstein, and so
and Roy Moore and the Senate race,
and the Roy
all
Moore
of these
and the
things,
Senate race, everything came.
And Democrats didn't want to look as if they were excusing you while prosecuting in a very political, rhetorical way, Roy Moore.
Yep.
All of those things combined.
Yep. Exactly. Thanks for remembering.
it's we're just dancing down memory lane now. But here's a broader question. Here's a broader question, because you're on tour, the only former U.S. senator currently on tour. I looked at some of the dates. There are many college towns there. Bill Maher did a thing on his show recently. It's a running bit, but he had a little bit of more editorial bite in it this most recent time, explaining jokes to idiots.
Yeah.
And he said, in woke America, cancel culture not only is real, but it has begun to infect college campuses in the way colleges interpret and deal with humor. And one of his lines, it was a good line, was, college used to be where kids went to lose their virginity. Now they go there to lose their sense of humor.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree?
There is some of that. And there's enough of it that I think it has a chilling effect on comedy. I know a lot of stand-ups who won't go to colleges.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. They just won't. And it's, you know, the comedians.
And what are they afraid of?
Well, the comedians that I always, that I grew up admiring were mm-hmm. People like Lenny Bruce and mm-hmm. George Carlin
yep.
and Dick Gregory. People who were, would explore the edge of offending people. And that was, people, I think, understood that then. And that was a positive thing, and made people think about what, you know, it made people think in a different way. It was satire.
And look, let's not forget, both Lenny Bruce, Dick Gregory, and George Carlin encountered corporate backlash, in some case, misdemeanor criminal backlash. But the most receptive people were the young audiences who were hungry to hear counterculture comedy. Bill Maher's point is that's less true now.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. And I think, again, it is, you know, all you need is a small percentage of people on campus to cause a stink or a ruckus. And so it doesn't, we're not talking about necessarily 95% of students.
Right.
You know, and so it's just, I think it's too bad. And this was kind of the role of satire, right? In high school, I remember going on a first date with a girl I really liked, and I took her to see Dick Gregory. And it was the wrong choice.
Yes.
But to me, there was always that value. And, you know, part of your job is to explore that area. And part of what you do, like part of what Bill does and a lot of great comedians do, is explore those areas. And very often it sheds light on stuff that you know, that most politicians don't usually do.
Right. I mean, it's meant to be jarring. It's sometimes right next to tragedy. And those sort of things live in an uncomfortable space, which is what satire is meant to be. More of our conversation with Al Franken on the other side of the break. I'm Major Garrett. This is The Takeout.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Al Franken is our guest. Al, I've spent a lot of time on the show in the recent weeks, understandably, talking about Ukraine. We'll get back to lighter topics in a second, but you were in the United States Senate. You were a forceful voice on many issues. Every guest that I have on the show, ever since Russia invaded Ukraine, I bring up the topic. Sometimes we devote the entire show to that, but every guest, even those not directly related, I bring the topic up. I want your thoughts on Ukraine. What do you think the stakes are for the U.S.? And if you think either President Biden is doing enough or the U.S. Congress is doing enough?
Yeah, I think Biden is doing about as much as he can. I think he did an amazing job putting this coalition together. I think that he took some risks in doing that. He released some of our intelligence very early, earlier than you usually do, saying that they're going to invade. And he did that early enough so that they were able to start putting sanctions together. It takes a while to put sanctions together. And so by the time the invasion started, they had a package of sanctions in place. It took a while to get everybody to agree to everything. And it's evolved. But I think he's done a terrific job. Now, he's had to make the judgment of taking Putin's nuclear, putting the nuclear arsenal on high alert. He had to take that seriously. Is, you know, this is like the madman theory. Remember Nixon? Sure. You know, Kissinger went to Ho Chi Minh and goes, "But Nixon's crazy. He might use nuclear weapons," you know. And I would Putin use nuclear weapons? I don't think so. But if there's a 2% chance, can you do a no-fly zone? And so he may be criticized for that, but they've been ramping up. And
It's my theory, Al, that the biggest story of 2022, whatever happens in the midterms, will not be the midterms, whether they go for all Republicans, and we'll get to that in a second or not, but we'll be whatever does or does not succeed from Russia's point of view or Ukraine's point of view in that particular battlefield. That will be the story of this year, and it will have implications for many, many years, if not decades to come. That's my theory.
I think it's a pretty sound theory. It may actually affect the midterms, though. You know, right now, it's looking bad, the midterms for Democrats. But my argument to Democrats, especially, is that there's a lot of time to go before November. In June, a couple of things are going to happen. One, we're going to have the hearings on the January 6th Select Committee Jamie Raskin just said it's going to blow the roof off the house. I think people, Americans, I have this little secret. They like television, and the hearings will be on television.
I've heard of that medium. I have some familiarity with
it. Yeah. I think there's going to be some pretty powerful stuff. And I do think that Americans, you know, the Republican Party has just become this anti-democratic party. And I think people will look at that and go like, And also in June, this term of the Supreme Court will end, and they're going to end Roe v. Wade. And by 2-1, Americans favor Roe v. Wade, support Roe v. Wade. So I think, and then as far as Ukraine, there's stuff that happens that you don't know necessarily whether or not it's going to happen. But if developments there, I mean, Ukraine, Zelensky has been amazing. The Ukraine people have been amazing. The Ukrainians, you could kind of see this coming since 2014. But my goodness, it's so inspiring what they're doing. And it's awful to watch. It is awful to watch. And, you know, I mean,
And you can tell in the country now people want to begin to turn away because they're not really sure what the trajectory of this is going to ultimately be. And they hear the president say there's not going to be ground forces. The country in general supports that. And they wonder, do I have to keep watching civilians get slaughtered? And there doesn't seem to be any other recourse. That's where it seems this narrative or this story is right now.
That's where it is right now. And, you know, I mean, things can happen. My hope is that one day we learn that Putin was garroted.
Well, okay then.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I don't think they let me close to, you know, who could do it is Tucker.
You're not going to change your tour dates to make room for that.
No, I'm sure they wouldn't let me there, but Tucker Carlson could probably get invited to the Kremlin and garrote him.
So I was listening to your podcast, by the way. Al Franken has a very successful podcast. I believe the terminology, this is a SAT word, Al, eponymous, the Al Franken podcast.
That's right.
Michael Lewis was on recently, the brilliant best-selling author Michael Lewis. And you opened by saying how you wish you were in the Senate and how you wish you had been there, because if I heard you correctly, you thought Democrats were insufficiently aggressive or pointed in dealing with some of the issues Republican senators raised with Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Yeah, that's
What would you have done had you been there?
Well, I actually kind of would have challenged them on a number of fronts. One of which, I mean,
Josh Hawley,
you know, had been misleading to the point of demagoguery, according to the National Review. and what's weird about it is he was called out on that before the hearing started, but he didn't back off it. He just did the same thing. And it would have been nice, I think, if someone on our side just called him on it. I mean, there are places where there's one in particular, this is very where in a she was on the sentencing commission, right? And it was on, I think this is where it was on people who had these images of child pornography. And she's getting testimony from somebody, and somebody said, well, people have this aren't necessarily pedophiles. And she kind of, in her questioning to him, to that when it says, so people who have this in their possession aren't necessarily pedophiles, question mark. But Hawley made it like her statement. and it was even in articles about this before Hawley started his statement. So it was pointed out that this is dishonest.
And a mischaracterization, an intentional mischaracterization.
So
I get 30 minutes. You know, I go like, gee, Senator Hawley, here, let me read from these things. And you just did it again. And don't you feel shame? And Cruz was doing this thing like, do you really think they're racist babies? And it was from a book called Anti-Racist Baby. And of course, that was deliberately misunderstanding what the whole book is about, which is that at very early ages, you get signals from your parents and people around you. And yeah, a baby, according to the CDC, is from birth to three. And yeah, there are little kids who pick up. And this is, a lot of it is unconscious. And the whole point of anti-racism, and that which is very legitimate, is for people to go like, oh, yeah, I have racist attitudes and they're unconscious and I should be aware of them. And what I shouldn't do is pass them on to my kids. And boy, that's a legitimate thing. And no one would say to him, you know, the CDC said, are there three-year-olds that have internalized some racist signals?
That is the voice of Al Franken. More of our conversation on segment three of The Takeout in just 1 second.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Al Franken is our guest. Al Franken, you might have read something about this. Twitter is now owned by Elon Musk. Are you afraid of that? Will you stay there? Do you have any progressive anxiety about that?
I actually, as soon as that happened, I tweeted, you know who's great? At Elon Musk. And it was so funny because I had a lot of people going, really, Al? And then I would have an answer to that person going, he's being sarcastic. And then, I was just...
Back to where we started, explaining jokes to the humor impaired.
And evidently, Elon Musk saw it and said, I don't know if he's being sarcastic or not. So at least he knew that it was up in the air. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. I don't think it's probably a great thing, but, you know, there'll be a lot of people watching it. And
will you change your Twitter habits at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
And this gets sort of back to our conversation about This gets back to our conversation about the bandwidth for comedy, what satire does, pushing boundaries. Elon Musk says Twitter should be a place where free speech is protected. Now, there's a distinction I think a lot of Americans miss, that if it's a private company, it's not covered by the First Amendment. It has no obligation under law to be a free speech police or provider. It is what it is, and you can participate or not as you choose, as you interact with a private company. But when you hear Elon Musk say, I want this to be a vigorous free speech place, how do you interpret that?
Well, this gets down to...
Do you interpret that as a green flag to Trumpian free speech?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, there's... Section 230, which was what the Internet Decency Act or something from
Communications Decency Act. Yep.
And basically said that they're platforms and not publishers, right? So that social media platforms can't be held.
A hugely important legal distinction.
Hugely. And you, this is right at the dawn of all this stuff. And you can understand why they did that. It was to protect, you know, to let people say stuff and not be censored and to protect them as the platforms. I think we've learned a lot since then. and we have a problem with disinformation. I wrote this book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations, back in 1995. And then I wrote Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them a Fair and Balanced Look at the Right about Fox. And that was in 2003. And these were about that the right wing was putting out a lot of disinformation and that was dangerous. Now, I don't know what's happened with that, but I you know, Facebook, they have these algorithms, right?
Everyone has algorithms,
but Facebook's whole thing is to keep you on, right? And its algorithms are a form of AI, and they know every choice you've ever made. And so they know you better than you know you. And so they know what will keep you on. And a lot of people being agitated keeps them on. So they send them stuff that agitates them. So when they say, we have no control over what they get, they have total control over what you get. And so,
right. And one of the things that Elon Musk has said is that now that he owns Twitter, is going to transparently disclose Twitter's algorithms. That might be helpful.
Yeah, I guess I don't know how you disclose algorithms. I guess someone understands algorithms can crunch algorithms. I don't think I'll be doing that work, but
this leads me to another
question.
The
thing is that people just, you can't yell fire in a crowded movie.
No, here. Understood. And I'm glad you mentioned the two books you mentioned, with both incendiary titles, borderline insulting to the audience that is receptive to what you're criticizing. And I wonder if you think that there is any obligation in public discourse, in particular for someone in public office, to persuade, or are we in a harangue culture? Meaning, if you call someone a liar, and someone who likes that person you're calling a liar, you're by implication calling them a dupe or a fool or a knave, does that create any space for persuasion? And do you think that we have lost our ability to study the art of persuasion?
Well, both of those titles were satirical and were...
But you also meant them.
Yeah, you can mean satire.
Of course. Okay.
but anyway, so... but. They were, and I know that people have come up to me on both those books and others I've done and said that it changed, it made a difference in how they saw things. And that's the point of satire. And to me, both those books are really funny and enjoyable and just fun to read. And that's what I, you know, it was, it's like candy, you know, it was just like fun to read. And, but on the other hand, very persuasive. And I know that a lot of people have come up to me and said, I got into politics because of that book. I got into politics because of this book. Mm-hmm. And I think I was identifying something that's really important. And I like to think I'm a skillful writer.
No doubt.
And
no
that doubt. I was very persuasive and that it was a positive. Now, when I was senator, did I call my colleagues idiots? No.
Except maybe Ted Cruz. I don't
know.
He's
not an idiot. He's very smart.
No. He's very, very smart. He knows so much better than he presents.
In my show, I have a whole Ted Cruz section. You know, I've said that I probably liked
Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues like Ted Cruz, and I hate Ted Cruz. Yes,
yes. And this goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago when you were talking about Senator Josh Hawley, who was criticized before the hearings, didn't take that criticism on board, but repeated it. And that that seems symptomatic to me of the validity and the political throw weight of demagoguery, that are in our current politics, there is an incentive structure, even when criticized by your own side, to stick with it. Because Josh Hawley also is not stupid.
No.
Josh Hawley knows what he's doing and knows why he's doing it. And the incentive structure doesn't seem to me to discourage demagoguery, perhaps in the way I romanticized it did when I first started covering Congress in the early 90s.
I agree with every word you say.
You know, and what is that something that needs to be remedied or should be remedied? Or is it just a reality that we are stuck with?
Well, you know, I don't know. I try. This is some of the stuff I point out in my show and on my podcast. I still use humor in obviously in the tour. It's I'm doing stand-up comedy, by the way, and it's mm-hmm. meant, yes. it's funny. There's a satirical aspect to it. That's what I do, and I do it on and on the podcast as well. But I don't know. We're in a terrible state. We really are. I mean, what you saw during that hearing, I thought was atrocious. And I thought it was atrocious on, you know, Lindsay was a friend of mine when I was there. I don't quite understand where he's gone. Cruz is Cruz. Hawley is... you know, his own version of awful, and Cotton, terrible. And then there was Blackburn, who that was a different vector of.
Right. And in general, you wish Democrats had been a little bit more aggressive. Back for segment four of The Takeout with Al Franken and our special guest. I'm Major Garrett. Just 1 minute. We'll be back.
June's Journey is a fascinating hidden object mystery gaming app where you'll play as June Parker, tasked with a daunting obligation, solve your sister's murder. Set in the 1920s, the era of glitz and glam, this family mystery is one for the ages. Everyone's a suspect until your investigation determines otherwise. The clues are all around you, hidden within tricky twists and turns. You'll collect detailed information about each character in your photo album where you'll comb over every detail. You can even join a detectives club to chat and play with others or against them in the detectives league. With hundreds of puzzles to solve, you should probably get started today. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back. Al Franken is our guest. Al, do you think President Biden will run for re-election, and do you think he ought to?
I think if he's... I think if he's feeling good... this whole thing about... I noticed that his walk is a little stiff, and I asked about this to a doctor, and they said, yeah, when you get that age, your ligaments are as flexible. And I went like, okay, that's no reason not to be president. You know,
not a yeah. disqualifier.
I mean, FDR was pretty good president. Yeah, and
yes.
He basically couldn't walk at all. And so I think it's just up to him. And, we'll see how he feels about it in 2 years. He says he is. And also, you know, it just look at where Reagan was at this point in his presidency. He was really underwater. And so many a slip twixt cup and lip, as we say. Mm-hmm.
And back to our earlier reference you made to how you think June could be a very important and possibly pivotal month in terms of the midterms. Is that your essential message to Democrats? You don't need to worry,
no.
Or you should worry and prepare. Wait, just wait for June? Or do you think there should be things Democrats should be doing now? And if so, what?
I think we should be working as hard as we can to get our message out. Part of the message is that an election is not a referendum, but a choice. And look what the choice is. The choice is the Republicans. Look at Rick Scott's 11-point plan. He wants to raise taxes on who? The lowest 50% of income earners in the country. He says everybody should pay income taxes. Well, there are a lot of people.
Have some skin in the game,
exactly,
he would say.
That's what he said. Well, you're talking about people don't pay income taxes, and it's by design, which is we've raised the standard deduction so that a lot of working Americans don't pay any income taxes. Actually, one of the things in the Trump tax cut, one of the good things was they raised the standard deduction. So he wants to raise taxes not on billionaires. I mean, he's also the richest guy in the Senate. He's worth over $200 million. Raise taxes on him? No. Now, Americans, and this includes Republicans, want to raise taxes on the wealthy. They do. And I think the Republican Party has become much more anti-elite, anti-Wall Street, anti-corporate. A large majority of Americans want to see increases in taxes, and for those at the top. But he is the chairman of the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, and he wants to raise taxes on the lowest income earners in America. So I think we should point that out. I think that would be a good thing to point out politically.
Democrats have every opportunity to do so. This brings us to a larger question I want to raise for you, because as you talk about that economic plan for Senator Scott, which Mitch McConnell doesn't agree with, but it's still out there. It's still a very important part of the conversation.
He's the chairman of their Senate.
Yes, exactly. It seems to me one of the strains in American politics, and there are many right now, is on the left you have economic populism, on the right you have cultural populism. Cultural populism manifests in state legislatures across the country with various abortion laws, LGBTQ laws, things about critical race theory. And populism isn't an ideology so much as a kind of approach that is, I know better, or I know what's best for you. And on the left, it's economic populism. On the right, it seems to me cultural populism. Agree or disagree?
I think there is a lot of that. I'm wondering if there isn't going to be a backlash to that. Because
to the cultural populism?
Well, to this thing like book banning and book burning. Like, I mean, for example, remember they're going to burn Beloved? Okay. This is a Toni Morrison Pulitzer Prize winning book from a Nobel Prize winning author, was taught in AP English to seniors in Virginia High School. And it was about these women who had been slaves, and they post-slavery, but post-Civil War, but they flashbacked to all this trauma, including being raped. And so they're going like, there's violent sex in this. This is pornography. And so that kind of happened during slavery. But so the school board wanted to do a book burning. And I don't know if you saw this. They had a town meeting on this with the school board. And a guy got up and said, like, my son gets plenty of pornography at home on his iPad. School is supposed to be a break in the pornography.
I missed that. I'm glad. I didn't know you were such an avid viewer of school board meetings, Frank.
I got sent the clip. But, I mean, I think that, you know, in this idea of like, okay, like in Florida.
But the point is you believe that there will be a political counter.
I think there'll be a backlash to this.
Cultural like, population.
Being able to sue a teacher for making.
Terry McAuliffe will tell you it didn't happen in time in Virginia's governor's
race. Well, he blew it by saying parents shouldn't have any say over what the kids. That was dumb. But Youngkin was lying. That's another thing. You shouldn't be able to lie, and you should call him out on it. Critical race theory is not taught in Virginia public schools. So when you say on day one, when I'm governor, teaching critical race theory in Virginia public schools stops, it's not taught, and you can't lie. Just say that. You were head of what was he head of some big huge Carlisle or what's the
yeah
they do research there. They know how to research things. They don't teach critical race theory. They teach critical race theory in graduate school and law school. That's where it's taught. Right. It's not taught, you know, to kindergartners.
That is the voice of Al Franken. He might have been Terry McAuliffe's campaign manager, but sadly for Terry McAuliffe, he wasn't. That concludes our version of this program. For our radio audience, we need to say farewell. For our CBS News streaming audience and those on our beloved podcast platform, stay tuned for the Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. We'll see you next week.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett coming to you from our home office. That's meanings my office in the CBS Bureau, Washington, D.C. Al Franken is joining us, continuing our conversation. He's up in New York City. So, Al, on this tour, the only former U.S. senator currently on tour, how long did you take to prepare, and is this all new stuff?
Well, that's a really, those are good questions. Before the pandemic, I was going around and giving what I would call speeches, there were speeches because I had a podium, but right. A lot of it was funny. I mean, a lot of it. I'm a comedian, and gradually, as I was doing the speeches, it became more stand-up-y. But I was still behind a podium and I still had notes. And I said, that's not stand up. That's a speech. Okay.
Right.
That's a speech with funny. Right. So then of course that stopped like that with the pandemic. And then as we were started to come out of the pandemic where we had the vaccine, I said, okay, I want to do stand-up. I love stand-up comedians. I admire stand-up. So I started going down to the Comedy Cellar in Greenwich Village, which is one of the great comedy clubs.
Yep.
And I would do like three nights a week, do like 25 minutes, a half hour, something like that, and start working up an act. And eventually I felt confident enough that I could go out and do it as just do an hour plus of stand-up. And so that's what I did. And that's how I developed it. And it was interesting because the Cellar
the Comedy Cellar, great, great club. It's a younger crowd. And the crowd that comes mm-hmm. see me is a little older and also a little right. bit more political than people right. coming to the Comedy Cellar are coming there to see stand-up comedy. And they're not yep. coming to see political stand-up comedy. They're not, you know, as some of them are sophisticated politically, some are not at all. So I had to figure out, I started doing some venues that had a little bit more politically hip audiences. And then I just started doing it. And mm-hmm. it's been great. I love it.
Do you write any jokes about Democrats?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have some. I do. I spend a lot of time on my experience in the Senate, and there are some right. Democrats I do talk about. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. And as you go around, some comedians do notebooking and journaling while they're on tour, and they add things as they go. Is your set pretty much established, and you keep it that way and work on it later on the other side of the tour, or do you evolve it as you go through the tour?
Well, you kind of, I mean, a lot of what I do is topical.
Right. So it's driven a little bit by the news.
Yeah. I mean, for example, we're at war or there's a war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find the funny in that. But I found it. And it's Tucker Carlson.
Go ahead.
Well, it's just that Tucker, you know, like it was like the day before the invasion, went on his show and said, you know, Democrats tell us we should hate Putin. But why? I mean, has Putin ever called me a racist? Has Putin, shipped our middle class jobs to Russia? Has Putin tried to cancel Christianity? And I thought to myself, you know, he's right. Putin hasn't done any of that. And yet I hate Tucker so much. And I was thinking, why do I hate Tucker? I mean, has Tucker ever, you know, poisoned political enemies with a deadly nerve agent? No.
Mm-hmm.
Has he indiscriminately bombed civilians with cluster bombs at maternity hospitals and children's hospitals? No, Tucker hasn't done that. Has he committed atrocities and killed hundreds of children? No, Tucker hasn't done any of that. And yet I hate Tucker so much. There must be something wrong with me. Mm. And then it just drives me friggin' crazy, this apologies for Putin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's a little dark, but that's okay.
It gets there. Let me ask you, is any part of your tour, again, the only former U.S. senator currently on tour, a prelude to another run for office?
No. It doesn't mean I won't ever run for office again, but the tour isn't a prelude.
Okay. I know all the off ramps here because I've engaged in these off ramps for most of my life as a political journalist, so I know what they are. But are you actively considering running again? Do you want to get back in public life?
Well, I consider myself in public life with the podcast and with what I'm doing. But yeah, I really do miss the Senate. You know, as we were talking about, I was very frustrated during the hearings. I really enjoyed especially judiciary hearings, but all of them, you know, I thought I was a pretty good questioner. I talk about this. I was on judiciary, obviously. I was not a lawyer.
Jeff Sessions will never forget your questions, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's odd that Jeff kind of stepped in it himself. I mean, I didn't ask him, did you meet with any Russians? I just said, would you recuse yourself if, you know, on any Russian investigation? And then he said, I didn't meet with them. And I went, okay. So I, you know.
And then things unfolded rather dramatically. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Al, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. Again, the tour, the only former U.S. senator currently on tour. Check it out on the website. What is it, Al?
The website is alfranken.com.
Alfranken.com. Easy to remember, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Major Garrett. This has been The Takeout. Al, thanks so much for hanging out with
us. Thank you, Major Merritt. Jesus. Can we try that again?
No, we're keeping it.
Merrick
we're keeping
Garland.
It. We're keeping it.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Mr. Attorney General.
Yes. Trust me, Al, I've been called worse.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.